Technorama episode 434.
I have no idea. Seriously, not a clue.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, Google. Where was the last Batman sighting?
Over there, in the media corner.
That ought to screw up their phones.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here, your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Okay, Google, not hey, Google.
Sorry, I'll get it right. That's the phone equivalent of a siren playing on a song while you're driving. Like, where's the cops? Yeah. I'm gonna have a podcast that messes with other people's electronic devices.
Well, yeah. I told you about on the Apple event that they had. He said, "Hey Siri," and my phone was plugged in right by the speaker, and Siri says, "What can I help you with?"
Well, he doesn't care if it's you or Tim Cook, and they all respond to Tim Cook.
Yeah, exactly.
Reprogram.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me, as always, is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm slightly exhausted.
You have another major life undertaking coming up, don't you?
Yeah, we're prepping the house for sale, and I've been outside pressure washing the vinyl fence all day.
It's called staging, Craig. You got to learn the terminology now.
I don't care as long as they buy it. I'll call it whatever they want. Yeah, whatever.
Apparently, I'm not too good at it. My house hasn't sold yet. Also joining us in the studio is Ben Rangitan. Hi, Ben.
Hello.
And
Keith Lane.
Oh,
the robotic Keith Lane, apparently. You need to oil those joints or something. Yeah.
Hey, Keith, weren't you on Police Academy? Weren't you the guy that doing the sound effects?
What was I on Police Academy? I don't know. Doing all the sound effects.
Yeah.
Probably.
Very nice. All right, quick break, and then into the show. We have coming up in this episode lots and lots of robots, so keep that sound clip handy. We have computer history and, of course, space flatulence. Wouldn't be a show without potty humor. Hi, this is Chuck from Technorama letting you know that nominations are now open for the 2015 Parsec Awards. Do you have a favorite speculative fiction podcast that you feel deserves some recognition? Then go to ParsecAwards.com and click the Nominate a Podcast option from the top menu. This is not a popularity contest, so podcasts with small audiences are just as eligible as those with a larger reach. All the rules are also available on the ParsecAwards.com website. Hurry, because nominations are only open during the month of April and May 2015. That doesn't give you much time. Winners will be announced at the Parsec Awards ceremony held at Dragon Con in Atlanta that first weekend in September. ParsecAwards.com. Show your love. Nominate someone. It takes about 60 seconds, and you can do more than one. Come on. That wasn't the right bumper, so we're just going to keep moving along. I thought that was an ID. Someone put my files in the wrong folder. Probably me.
Well-oiled machine.
Yes. Grinding halt. There we go. We do have some feedback, though. We'll keep going with these little clips and music.
Put it in second gear there, Chuck.
We got the pedal to the metal.
Very good. Let's see if I can get that.
Mailman, mailman, mail today. Reach right ahead and pull one out.
We could do this a cappella.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Oh, that's a real delay.
Did you ever read the Sorcerer's Stone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were singing the Hogwarts theme in any style they want, all at the same time. So you had like Weasley brothers singing some dirge version.
Oh god.
And it took like 4 minutes to finish.
The rap version.
That's what we're gonna do with that thing next.
Yeah.
We asked last week, how many network devices are in your home, and can you name them? Mark Shepard responded, yes, I can. He's got a Chromecast, Apple TV, Mac Mini, MacBook Pro, Lenovo laptop, 3 Samsung phones, iPad 3rd Gen, iPad Mini 2, a Nook, continued on the next tweet, HP tablet, iPad 1, Airport Express, and I'm surely missing something. That's a good count. And listener Brad writes back, can I just send you the results of my Nmap scan?
Sure, absolutely.
We have a ton of crap.
Yeah, we got a lot.
Isn't it amazing?
I mean, I've got we got an access point for my phone, my VoIP phone, and for his work computer.
For my computer setup at work.
And then everything else is Wi-Fi. Well, that's, you know, the access point's Wi-Fi.
Right.
So you got work laptop, my home laptop, his home laptop, 2 storage devices, a Mac Mini.
A Mac Mini.
Apple TV.
We both have iPads.
2 iPads, 2 iPhone 6s, and the...
heaven forbid we should ever have to change the password on our access point or something.
Oh, and the Blu-ray player, which also has multimedia. Right. Yeah.
So what's your address? And when are you all home?
Plus, I'm sure we're missing something.
It's just as crazy around here. And you think of what's not Wi-Fi too. I don't even want to think about it in this house.
So you didn't do an inventory for yourself, Chuck?
All right, here we go. We'll try to do this as quickly as possible. We'll start with the little stuff. My iPhone, Donna's iPhone, Apple TV, Chromecast. Oh, I just wandered over to the guest house. Is there anything else that's networked over there? I don't think so. We have a different access point for the guest house, so that kind of stays if people are over there. We've got first generation Apple TV. We've got 2 computers here in the studio. We've got Donna's computer, my computer, iPad. Wow, it just
mushrooms.
That ancient thing over in the corner.
No, the Apple IIe, it's not on the network.
Not
it's
on
one
Wi-Fi.
Of the few computing devices that's not. Maybe that should have been the question. Do you have any computing devices that are not networked?
I've got 2 cell phones, of course. I've got my MacBook Pro. I've got a desktop on the floor. I've got a Plex media server, which is actually another laptop. A converted laptop, iMac, behind me. And then I've got my TiVo. I've got 2 Chromecasts and the Blu-ray player. And then Harrison has his desktop, DVD. An iPad, and an iPad 2.
Yeah, 2 DVD players here. I forgot.
Maybe something else.
I forgot the TiVo.
That's nuts.
And the Wii. I got a Wii U, rather.
Oh, the Wii. Yeah, forgot the Wii.
So you don't have a phone for your son?
No,
There's no IP addresses left.
They've
all been taken.
Yeah, sorry to. Yeah, private addresses, but no.
So your desktop is on the floor.
Yeah, I got one.
Then it's a floor top.
It's a floor top, isn't it?
It's like your footrest.
When I was in college, I worked at a computer store, and we had to carry a spares kit for all the compact machines that we serviced. Well, I thought that these resources sitting around were just a waste of shelf space. So I built a working machine out of spare parts, including having to hand solder a keyboard connector together.
Oh my gosh.
So that I could get from the stakes on the motherboard to a DIN 5, you know, full size.
Oh, nice.
It was sitting on top of cardboard boxes, so it was a box top.
It's a box top. That one requires that. Maybe.
Yeah, that's more appropriate. Then, thank you for your email. We will have another question at the end of the show. Keep listening. Yes.
Oh, hold on a second.
Oh.
I just want to hear the rest of that. Hold on. There we go. All right. Jeremy.
Kyle. That's what it was.
He corrected Kyle. It tastes great, man.
No, it's Kyle.
Okay. Kyle, excuse me. He's got a laptop, his mom's computer, her laptop. His brother's computer, dad's iPad, iPhone.
Does her brother know that he's got the computer? That's what I want to know. If you have somebody else's machine, do they know it's there?
Yeah. Maybe he's working on it for him.
Supplies.
So he's got mom and dad's iPad, their iPhones. His brother has Android phones. He's got a 3DS, a Wii U, and a Wi-Fi extender. Oh, and our printer. So he adds.
The printer. I forgot the Wi-Fi printer.
That's right. Yeah. I got a printer.
We have two printers.
See, the list keeps growing.
Yikes.
You know what? I really hope that Wi-Fi doesn't radiate so bad I get cancer because I'm screwed.
Yeah. We're getting to that story. The video keeps flipping to the robotic sword sparring. We're getting there. We have to get through the history, though.
The history.
On this day in history for April 15th, 2015, it was on this date in 1738 that Circe, an Italian opera by George Frederick Handel. What are you doing, Craig?
Mike,
screwing with you, sorry.
Makes its premiere performance in London, England. He's putting spaces in between there. Yeah, haha, April Fool's a little late. You're next, buddy.
Also today in 1755, Samuel Johnson's A Dictionary of the English Language was published in London.
Yay, he got it right. Yay. I almost thought it said Samuel L. Jackson's Dictionary. Yeah, that would have been different.
Almost said Samuel Adams.
Ben.
Well, President Abraham Lincoln dies after being shot the previous evening by actor John Wilkes Booth. Vice President Andrew Johnson becomes president upon Lincoln's death 150 years ago today.
Aww.
Also like today. Yes.
Your turn. Shut up, Craig.
Also, also today in 1892, the General Electric Corporation company is formed. Corporation now.
Well-oiled machine here.
Yep.
April 15th, 1896, closing ceremony of the games of the first Olympiad in Athens, Greece.
Wow.
The British passenger liner RMS Titanic sinks in the North Atlantic at 2:20 a.m., 2 hours and 40 minutes after hitting an iceberg. Only 710 of the 2,227 passengers and crew aboard the ship survive 103 years ago today.
They survived.
They're still alive.
They survived 103 years ago today.
Yeah, they're still alive.
Wow, good them. Surprise.
Yeah. Well, it was 92 years ago today that insulin becomes generally available for use by people with diabetes.
How about that?
Yay.
Yay. The same date in 1924, Rand McNally publishes its first road atlas.
That must have been quite the adventure before a road atlas came along.
I imagine
hey guys,
so.
A new version. All right, road trip.
Jackie Robinson debuts for the Brooklyn Dodgers, breaking baseball's color line on this date in 1947.
And the maiden flight of the B-52 Stratofortress.
Stratovarius.
B-52 Stratovarius, yes.
I was thinking of B-52s, sorry. On this Stratofortress.
Oh,
Fortis? God. I might have to go look that. Forget it. On this date of 1952.
63 years later. Yeah. Wow, that play's been going a long time.
Yeah. Well, April 15th, 1955, the McDonald's restaurant dates its founding to the opening of a franchise restaurant by Ray Kroc in DePlain, Illinois.
That's a crock.
What a crock, yeah.
That's a crock.
I've been to that one.
The first Ford Mustang rolls off the showroom floor 2 days before it is set to go on sale nationwide on this date in 1964.
Very cool. Two bombs explode near the finish line at the Boston Marathon in Boston, Massachusetts, killing three people and injuring 264 others on this date in 2 years ago already. Yeah, wow. Time flies.
He just
was sent to, yeah.
That's right.
All 32 counts.
And a total.
Oh, dear.
A total lunar eclipse occurs, producing a blood moon 1 year ago today.
1 year.
And we've made it
darn
through this date in history.
Yay.
No, I forgot to paste in the birthdays, but you know what? I think we'll stop on that note. And
I think there's a birthday somewhere.
Not here there isn't.
That's right.
We're going to let the marching band slowly fade away.
Just cut them off
quick. You want some birthdays for April 15th?
Oh, no.
We have listener birthdays, but we don't have celebrity birthdays.
Oh, celebrity birthdays.
Oh, yeah.
They're all celebrities to me.
See if I can find it. April 15th.
Oh, I had a few. The only one I remember that I actually edited out because of time was Nikita Khrushchev.
Oh, my.
There's more to it than that. Yeah. Let's get on with the news.
Yeah, nobody.
The bad news is that there was a mayor sued for erecting a giant robot statue in Turkey.
Far out.
Yeah, what a cool statue. And it was taken down.
Why?
Yeah, well, everyone's all worked up over a Nightmarish Lucy statue in the United States.
Which is very scary.
It was scary. Where did they...
Oh,
that artist. I don't think they'll get another commission.
No. But
the giant robot is causing a big to-do in Turkey. The mayor of Ankara is being sued by the Turkish Union of Engineers and Architects for, quote, wasting, unquote, taxpayer dollars on a robot statue. All right, now
you got this.
Okay. Mele Grichensk approved the use of funds. You just have to go a lot. And the robot was unveiled on April 1st, leading residents to believe it was an April Fool's joke. They later learned it was not. And the mayor is apparently just obsessed with robots.
Oh, he's got my vote.
He also recently been under fire with accusations of embezzlement and misconduct, according to Yahoo News. The statue was erected to promote a new theme park called Enka Park, according to the Hurriyet Daily News, which will contain about 20 giant transformer-like robots as well as dinosaurs when complete. You think the Brontosaurus will be back?
Mm.
Oh, sneak in that news that didn't make it in the news.
Yeah, no Dinosaurus.
And Pluto wants to be a planet again.
Yeah. I'm curious, how did he spend this money and nobody had any heads up?
That's why he's in trouble.
Yeah, if he's been
embezzlement.
Misappropriating funds, I mean, he's going, hey, I need a robotic statue. Don't tell anybody.
I mean, you know, usually I've dealt with our own local city when dealing with just computer parts, okay, a long time ago. And they had to give me a PO. You know,
it's, for computer parts.
This is, yeah.
I mean, grief. He's got to have, there's got to be some... Somebody else was involved in this purchase. Somebody that worked with him. Wouldn't somebody go, what the hell is this? What are you doing?
I'm not making it up. I'm just reporting it.
Well, I'm just asking the questions here.
Turning to the listener birthday calendar, we have at the top of the list my lovely wife, Donna.
Yay. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Donna.
They say that because she's quietly listening in the corner. We know she's a listener. She has no choice now. Also on the 16th is Daniel Johnson Jr. 17th is Sam Roberts.
Hey, Sam.
I was going to say former friend, but she's still our friend.
She's still
but
our she's friend. She's a former Phoenician friend.
Phoenician. Hey, I come out there and she flees. She flees.
No, she's now closer to you.
Yes. She's actually much closer.
I guess we'll see her in Dragon Con, right?
Probably. Anthony, a.k.a. Scafey on the 18th. The 19th is Susie the Geek's daughter and geek in training, Amanda. Happy birthday to Amanda. She's probably got to be like, 25 now?
Yeah. She's in full career mode.
We met her when she was like 6. I don't know. Yeah. Other people's kids grow up way too fast.
We saw her last year. She's not 25.
She's turning into a very nice young lady. Two birthdays on the 20th. Geek Tech Live, who is now 42, according to Facebook. Yes, I'm pillaging these from other sources. So if you didn't put your name on the birthday calendar, try to avoid our Google search type engine. And Brian Kennedy was also on the 20th. Happy birthday to you. But if you really want to be official and make this much easier on all of us, opt in. Go to the wiki, chuckchat.com/wiki, and get your name out there.
Hey, why don't we just put everybody's birthdays in the world in here and have them opt out?
And then we get them on a mailing list. It's a lot of fun.
The podcast would be like 3 hours. We're naming everybody's names for the day.
It would just be your name podcast.
Yeah, there you go.
And you get to listen once a year to see if you made it. All right, another quick break. We will be back with all the rest of the news, what we could find on the inner tubes.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the geeky t-shirt with the kids. Yeah, come over here. I've got a great podcast you should be listening to. It's called How to Grow Your Geek, and it's all about TV shows and movies and games and great things you can do with your kids that you can enjoy together and maybe, just maybe, get your kids to be geeks like you. So come over and visit howtogrowyourgeek.net and see what you might have been missing.
Scooby, sir, what do you think of Technorama?
It does a wonderful job getting my bathroom grout clean.
I found the birthdays. They didn't make it online here yet. I could copy and paste them real fast.
Yeah, go ahead.
Or I could just read them as fast as I can and see how I do on all the names. You want to laugh at me this time?
Yes, I do. Ready?
Okay. Happy birthday goes out. Well, we should do this the right way.
I'm laughing
get
already.
Get the band back where it was. We were about here, weren't we? you can edit your own show back together.
On the fly.
Yeah.
Happy birthday goes out of the state to Pietro Cataldi. I thought that said Peter Capaldi at first. Italian mathematician and astronomer born on this date in 1552. Well, if he's a Time Lord, then he certainly could have gone back and done that.
Actually, on April 14th is Peter Capaldi.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coincidence? I don't think so.
There's three doctors this week.
Coincidence? I don't think so.
I think not.
Check the Julian calendar. I'll bet they're close, too. Also born on this date in 1707, Swiss mathematician and physicist Leonard Euler. That's E-U-L-E-R. Nobody would have got that right.
Nope.
But the people who took calculus. Hey. Ah, infinitesimals. Frederick George Wilhelm von Struve, the German astronomer and academic, was born 222 years ago today.
I thought that was the guy from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's what I thought, too.
Also born today in 1921, Ukrainian-Russian general. You know that's a setup for a good name, yeah. Right? And pilot and astronaut, Georgi Beregovoy. That's it. Elizabeth Montgomery, the actress best known for Samantha, the modern witch on Bewitched, was born today in 1933. Also born today in 1940, American baseball player and actor Willie Davis. Willie Davis was an actor?
Who knew?
Just like Leonard Nimoy was a singer.
That's right.
No, he was.
Oh, yeah.
American captain and astronaut John L. Phillips turns 64. And finally, Hermione Granger actress Emma Watson turns 25.
Leonardo da Vinci, April 15th.
And Dick Sargent also had a birthday around this time, too.
Dick Sargent was...
How did I miss Leonardo?
The 19th.
Wow. Okay. Now that this show is totally off the rails and time-twisted, we time-lorded our own show.
Yeah.
Far out.
Actually,
that's not hard to do.
Actually, Peter Davison's is the 13th, and David Tennant is like the 18th.
Yep.
Whoa. You're like a regular encyclopedia. Yeah,
Peter Capaldi is...
Hey, we had to do research.
Yeah. So we have three.
Somebody did, right?
Yeah.
Good thing, too, because nobody around here has any. All right. Now, if you've been watching the video, the clip you've all been waiting for is Hacks and Stray Stories. This one ranks right up there. We definitely should not have taught the robots to sword fight.
Definitely not.
Ben, would you to read the narrative on this?
Oh, I'll give this a shot. Well, Japan's Namiki Laboratory is known for its robotic arms and high-speed vision systems that can move and react faster than a human being can. That's the neat part. The scary part is that for some reason, the researchers, they have decided that they should be teaching their creations to fight effectively with swords. This is supposed to be a good idea?
No.
Have we not learned from those Terminator movies how this will all end? Apparently not.
Or BSG.
Yeah. Yes, because using a pair of high-speed cameras working to give the arm stereo vision, the robot is able to recognize the position and movements of a human opponent, as well as his own sword. Once the human starts to attack, the robot uses custom algorithms to calculate the possible trajectories of its opponent's sword, and then plots an effective defensive motion to protect itself using its own weapon. Wow.
Warning.
Based on the graphic, the guy isn't a very good opponent.
Hey,
yeah. He's just standing there. Hey. He doesn't even swing.
Hey, I imagine when that guy... I like to think outside the frame of that picture is a big donut he's trying to get behind the robot.
Yeah.
No, you can't have it.
Remember the movie, is it
Deep Blue? The one where they made the smart sharks? That's another smart, great.
This gives a whole new meaning scientist. Whole new meaning to robotic arms.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, not a good idea.
This is a preliminary thing, but yeah, I got a really bad feeling where this could all go, especially once AI comes into being.
Yes.
The singularity and swords.
Yeah. Imagine this. Say like you're walking up to a door frame, and you're trying to break into a place. Well, the door frame is actually robot arms, and it comes out and starts smacking you on the head.
That sounds like something out of RoboCop.
Yeah. I like that.
Oh, we're in. Oh, you know.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
Craig, I think this next story is right up your alley. Would you like to take it?
It's up something.
I don't know what's...
Yeah, it's up something, all right. Is it possible to fart your way across space?
And I disposed of all of my fart apps.
Dang
it. Aw. We missed the audio effects.
All right.
We can put them in ourselves.
Yeah, so don't tell me you're having a thought about... Don't tell me you haven't thought about this. It's only natural to think about expulsion of your bodily gas as a rocket launch, and then imagine that it would be what it'd be like in space.
I will say I have not thought about this. It has not been something that's primarily on my mind.
You have now.
Thank you.
You can't say that anymore. All right. So PBS's Space Time explains your farts could push you through the great abyss. They'd have to. It's just physics. It's just physics. I'm sorry. I'm having trouble reading. It's just science. But even the most prolific farter. I'm sorry.
This is really going badly.
I'm sorry.
There is science in here.
No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You know what this? As I'm reading this, I'm imagining the movie Gravity, where she can't get back to the thing.
Yes, you could. You watch the video. Yes, you could. They said if you were just 10 meters away from your spaceship and you had the ability to fart, it would take you a couple hours to get there. So, yes, you can propel your way through space. It's basic physics, but it's incredibly slow. You'd only be moving fractions of an inch.
Unless you could do it like a blue dart.
But then they went into alternatives. They said, you could throw something. They said, if you've got a big giant burrito, rather than eat that and wait for the gas to, propel you, just throw the burrito in one direction and it will push you the other way.
That's true.
And they also said better than farting would actually be peeing, because the volume and the density of what you're propelling in the opposite direction gets you going better.
Well, the only problem with that is you're peeing inside a spacesuit, and so it kind of reverberates on you.
Well, they put some caveats around here, like some special valve out the back that...
Imagine my conundrum, though. I mean, I'm thinking of Sandra Bullock trying to fart, but she's a girl. Girls don't fart. Right?
I'm not going to say it. I am not going to say it.
That's what I told my wife this morning. The good thing the cat was on the bed.
You better be careful, Chuck. She's right behind you. She's
within arm's reach. If suddenly I go off camera, you'll know what happened.
Yeah, that was the direct. That was the deleted scene. Sandra Bullock went.
I was thinking something totally different that I'm not going to touch.
Okay, we'll leave that one alone. We're done.
Thanks
with
for not
body
telling
humor.
Us.
Yeah, don't talk about sharks, though.
Craig, do we have anybody in the chat room to give a shout out to?
Yeah. Hold on. Yes, Jeremy Keel. Did I say his name right again? I messed it up.
Kyle,
whatever. Jeremy, he knows who he is.
Shadowbird.
Yes, Shadowbird. That's right. Myron Dupler. Then we have Tim Elliott.
What?
And Tim Elliott. I'm going backwards to the list here.
He's reading the chat messages.
Oh. Well, there's not a list like who's in there. It's like I have to scroll back and see who he's been talking. So Tim Elliott. That's about it.
Okay.
He's been active.
Thank you, people. If you want to be in the chat room, you can join us every Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern time and watch this show live and see what may or may not get edited out.
Yeah. Oh, I guess Myron is Zaho Doom, right? Isn't that right?
No.
Oh, he just brought it up.
Okay.
He just said Sadoom.
Maybe. I'm losing track of who's got what handles. Let's do something else. We have a 1940s prediction that predicted robotic jockeys, and it has finally come true. For you see, back in 1940s, they said this year's Kentucky Derby was certainly exciting for its mint julep-soaked spectators, but our future-minded ancestors might have considered it a bit old-fashioned. Why? None of the jockeys were robots. The March 1945 issue of Radiocraft magazine imagined a future where human jockeys would be replaced by radio-operated robots. The Jockey Box would be outfitted with cutting-edge radio controls and loudspeakers, while their human controllers would sit near the track in front of the electronic panels and microphones. The article went something like this. The jockey would consist of a modern radio receiver with outputs fitted for... That's a little loud. I'm going to back that off just a touch more. Fitted with speaker and relays, yes. Which would set into action motors, which control the arms to which the reins are attached and operate the crop. All right, and it goes on like that. Now, here's the kicker. We now have modern robotic jockeys, but for camels. It's true.
Far out.
This is cool. It's a very short story and a bunch of photos that Don is going to flip by on the frame. But we see a gentleman here, apparently from the Middle East somewhere. I don't know exactly what region. Dubai, probably, because they're very rich. And they've outfitted the camels with little robotic jockeys. Now, I believe the head is just decorative, but it's got a little whip that whips decorative. The camel. Now,
anatomically correct jockey, robot jockey.
to be honest, there is a comment in here that I totally forgot about, and I'm glad they brought this up, because in recent years, you know, you're better off with a lighter jockey. That's why,
That's right.
Horse they're racing jockeys are all like...
That's why they're all short.
Right, and they have to weigh a certain amount so that it's all even, like 105 pounds, and you got to strap on a little bit if you're underweight and whatnot. So what they've been doing overseas is using children.
Yikes.
Yeah, they've had a problem with child jockeys, and, you know, labor laws being what they are, and you know, I'm sure trafficking is in among there as well. I shouldn't make assumptions about stories I don't know anything about, but we do this show anyway.
That's what this show is about.
That's our mantra, Chuck.
So, hooray for robots for saving children from being enslaved as camel jockeys.
Hey, I do want to make a prediction here.
Oh, boy.
Write
this one down.
Yeah. By the year 2240, we'll have robot camels to go with the robot jockeys.
Well, we already have the robot, that robot bear, cougar, whatever it is, that thing that runs around real fast. Have you seen that?
No.
That very scary looking robot.
Oh, is it like the DARPA, the donkey? You know what I'm talking about? What do they call that? The robot that walked like a donkey and you could pack it.
No, this was something that apparently you can't knock it down. If you try to knock it down, it just kind of staggers to the side.
Yeah.
And it can run. It can run fast.
Yes. And it's
not the lumbering kind of Osimo thing. It is scary looking. It looks like it'll eat your head off.
What, yeah, it has no head itself, right?
Who did you say that?
What?
The other robot? What did
I don't know. I remember what it was called. I remember seeing images and videos of it, but we'll find out who it is.
You said another robot name.
Osimo.
Oh, I thought it was Osimo.
Oh, no, that's Chuck's
good. It took me a long time. It took me a long time to figure out that it was Asimov with no V.
Oh.
Learn something new every day.
Maybe that was just me. Maybe
this isn't one of them.
If you learn something from this show, it's an accident.
Oh, it was a cheetah. It was the robot cheetah.
Put saber teeth on that and we're all set.
Yeah. They said it would go up to 28 miles an hour.
That's substantial.
Wow. That's faster than I can run.
Yeah, me too.
But you just have to be faster than the slowest guy in the race.
If I saw something like that chase me, I'd be running pretty fast.
Yeah, it has no head and everything. It's like, you know what's it going to do when it
they'll put a head on it.
And what I like is I actually pulled up the video for it, and as it starts out, it's kind of teetering. And it starts getting faster and faster until it's like 14 miles an hour. And then, and you can see the speed cranking up and it really starts moving on that treadmill.
All right, we're going to flip for the next story. We have an old computer experience going on at the Bard Graduate Center in New York.
All right.
Who's up for this one? Or I'll take it.
Let's go.
Done.
Oh, modern, I thought you meant road chip.
Modern computer interfaces are swiftly being reduced to glossy touchscreen slabs, distancing us from the inner workings of the devices we use every day. Kimon Kermitis. Better get that treated.
You volunteered for
this,
remember?
That's why I gave it to you.
Director of the Digital Media Lab at Bard Graduate Center in New York is offering a refresher on how we got here by, quote, bringing the clunk back. I love that quote. He says that in the video, too. From the pleasing clack of mechanical keyboards to the blister-inducing Atari joysticks. Yes, I had blisters. On a pinky, no less. You know,
I have too. I did too. I still do.
He curated the collection of computer history and put it on display at the school's Focus Gallery in an exhibit called The Interface Experience, 40 Years of Personal Computing. And they highlight, there's a bunch of things in here, but they highlight four or five main computers. The first is the Commodore 64.
Yes.
Because he goes through the reasons in this, in the video, but it was a sort of breakthrough in sound technology. It had a little bit better audio chip than the rest of its competitors.
Yes,
the graphics were still pretty primitive, and most of the stuff was text, and sometimes color, and sometimes it wasn't.
Now, hey, watch what you say about the Commodore.
Then the next breakthrough was in 84 with the Macintosh, brought us the true GUI and the mouse that we all recognize and interact. You could walk up to a Mac any day, you know, even the original ones, and use it.
You can use it.
You'd know what it was like. Yeah. Then he talks about the Palm Pilot, which was...
You had one of those.
I had one.
Yep. I had several generations.
Yeah.
And the reason there is that the Palm Pilot... was a specialized device. It didn't try to do everything the computer could do. It was very specific on its user interface. Augment.
And it did it was like, yeah. it was like it, really well.
Yeah, augmented what you were doing on the computer.
Yeah, Keith said it did it really well. And then I believe the fourth one was the Microsoft Kinect. That the motion gestures and things like that.
Ah, yes.
So, you know, it was all about the interface is what he's highlighting. Not what made this computer better than that computer. But it was all about the interface. So I thought, that's very cool. I wish we had access to something like this nearby, like if this was a traveling thing.
Yeah.
But
maybe we can call him up that stuff around town.
Or call him up for an interview.
Yeah. You know what?
We need to get back on the interview wagon.
Yeah, we do. You know, I was going to say, there's a Chromebook that has a touch screen on it now. Oh, there's a couple of them. Asus makes one, and of course the... Google's Pixel, their high-end Chromebook. And they're cool and all, but, you know, it's a laptop. I mean, a touch interface is great, like on an iPad. I'm sorry, he mentioned, you know, the interfaces before everything was touch.
Right.
I've seen one of the Asus Chromebooks, and when you reach over the keyboard to interact with the screen, it just doesn't work.
Try writing code on a touchscreen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It has a keyboard. It's a laptop format.
Okay.
You open it up. The screen's up. You know, it's an L shape, just like a regular laptop. But having to reach over and touch the screen, it doesn't feel right. Partly because I think the screen kind of gives when you're touching it, so it kind of wiggles. You know, like an iPad, it's in your hand and it's solid. I don't see how you can really put a touch interface on everything and make it work.
No, you can't. It's not appropriate.
Why not?
Mouse, why not?
I love a mouse and a keyboard.
I like the way Keith thinks. Why not?
How about voice interface?
Yeah, okay. I'm good for voice.
Yeah.
As long as it understands what Craig's saying.
Yeah, there's that.
That's a problem. It wouldn't understand me. I'd never get anything done.
To the Media Corner, Batman.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here in the Media Corner.
And we were talking about the doctor earlier. So, Ben, would you take the doctor's story?
Wait. Yes.
Which doctor? Who?
Who? What? Who?
Which?
What?
In order to, doctor? Yeah, which?
Which?
As a witch doctor. Dr. Bombay.
Which doctor who? Yeah.
Which? Okay, getting very confused here. In order to figure out if our ability to spot and be distracted by stimuli had an evolutionary biology reason or was simply learned, researchers checked to see if people were being distracted from a task by spiders or by Doctor Who.
I love this comparison. What? It's brilliant. Read on.
Well, the things we are afraid to... things we are afraid of to get our notice more easily than things we view neutrally. One theory is that our biology brings our attention more quickly to threats. And if you are an arachnophobe, me, spiders are a threat. Another theory is simply that our attention is grabbed by whatever is in the room and has the most relevance to us.
Shiny.
In other words, that it's something we learn based on our experiences.
Elephant.
Yes. In order to test these theories, researchers performed attention tests with distractors. Oh, I wish I were part of this. One was spiders, and one was something that we could not have encountered in nature. A Gallifreyan who goes by the name of the Doctor.
Really?
Yeah. Well, in the very geekly titled, but what about the Empress of Ragnos? The allocation of attention to spiders and Doctor Who is a visual search task and is predicted by fear and expertise. This was published in Emotion in 2011. Researchers asked participants to look at a grid of photos and answered whether or not a horse was among the photos.
Okay.
This is getting interesting. The participants were divided into three groups. Whovians, Whovian arachnophobes, and people with no strong feelings on either. Mixed in with the photos of horses, spiders, and the doctor were photos from blue healers and fish. The amount of distraction... Well, I didn't write this. The amount of distraction was measured by reaction time. If we were hardwired to see threats, spiders should have been more distracting to all three groups.
Right.
Instead, the Whovian group was more distracted by Doctor Who than by spiders. You know, being that I am a Whovian arachnophobe, I would have loved to have been been on this study.
Yeah, you probably would have.
This whole study sounds kind of...
That's why it's on the show.
Yes.
We still have time in the show. We can do this. We can do this now.
No.
Look at the screen, man. Look at the screen.
Actually, that's not too bad. If you started showing things from Planet Spiders, I'd be real all queasy.
Oh yeah.
So of the three groups, what they're saying is if spiders were truly the threat, and if it were an arachnophobe, then all three groups would have had spiders higher. But the Whovian arachnophobes were not. They were more interested. They were distracted by Doctor Who.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Where would my distraction have lied? Because I am terrified of spiders, and I love Doctor Who. So I don't know where. Just for my own satisfaction, I kind of like to know where I would have fallen in that.
Well, but I mean the Arachnos or whatever.
Arachnos,
right? Yeah.
She was not. That was too outlandish, fantastical. Now, Planet of the Spiders was a different story. Those were giant spiders.
Yeah.
Her, she was,
That was a throwback to like the old 60s and 70s Doctor Who, where you had crazy costumes. That was fun. All right, we've saved some time near the end of the show for Craig because he wanted to talk about Daredevil, but you can't send any spoilers.
No spoilers.
Right. Daredevil came out on Netflix this last weekend.
Yes, I would not spoil it for you guys.
All right.
Actually, Wilson Fisk took Matt Murdock and company out for smoothies.
Since I'm the low-ranking official, I've only watched one episode so far. If you haven't watched any, I highly recommend it. I think we're all in agreement that it's a good
series. It's quite good.
Yeah, it's off to a great series. I think the first episode sets up a lot of things that look very intriguing. And I'd like to see them follow on.
It's a little slow to get started, but it's okay. That's not a bad thing. You know,
one thing that I've noticed is that the further you go in, the more backstory you get on Matt Murdock so that you begin to understand how he is the way he is, which I like a lot.
Yeah. Well, they didn't spend a whole lot of time on his history, though.
No, they're doing it a little bit at a time with each episode.
Oh,
and they're doing it chronologically, too, which is very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I read the way they were given his backstory, which is kind of the way they did it, was in a little bit of flashbacks here and there, just like you said. So you're not inundated with, you know, years of him coming up to speed.
It's not info dump.
Right. So it worked out really well.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a little bit on the darker side than than your standard.
Not your mother's Marvel show. Let's be honest. No. I mean, this is pretty dark and intense.
Yes. There is a little bit more blood than you would see in a Marvel film. You know, is a little more graphic. But not so much where, I would let my son see it. He's 13. He's a little bit on the mature side. So I wouldn't have any problem with him seeing this. A little bit more language. It's a little bit.
It's Netflix.
It's Netflix.
Oh, that's true.
So they're not tied down to all that stuff.
Yeah, they don't have a lot of network standards that they have to adhere to. So it allows them to go into kind of darker areas that they've not been able to go to with other shows. And given the fact that the show is set in Hell's Kitchen,
Gordon Ramsay's restaurant?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Shut up! Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. The man who's always pounding his fist saying, "You use so much spice, people are seeing into the future unfolding space." Anyway.
I like the one where he says, "This chicken's so raw, a skilled vet could bring it back."
Well, now that we've completely lost topic.
Well, yeah, what I was.
But the fact is that being that it is in a very, very bad place in New York and still suffering from the events of the attack on New York and the Avengers, which they do make reference to a couple of times.
Oh, okay.
They
cool.
do make, yeah, they do refer to that. So they're telling us right off the bat, this is the same cinematic universe as the movies we've had and as of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I like.
Yep. Lens continuity.
Yeah, it kind of ties it all together, which, according to Kevin Feige, keeps saying it's all connected, and this is supposed to be they keep saying that Daredevil is the first Defender, and they are bringing a Defenders TV show to Netflix.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got Power Fish, Jessica Jones, and
Luke Cage.
And then the Defenders. Yeah. Oh, Luke Cage, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you got to give Marvel credit for keeping this universe together and having a plan, because I've seen rumors on the internet, which can be trusted about as far as you can throw it,
that
the next 5 years are pretty well set in terms of films and other features that really hold this whole story together of where the Avengers come in and who's doing what.
It's been said that Kevin Feige has got this big mural in his office that is drawn out. They said someone described it as like a gigantic solar system, but it's actually a big diagram showing where all the shows are and all the movies are going to be connecting and how it's all going to be culminating with the Infinity Wars. Yeah. So I'm really curious to see, will the Defenders be playing more of an active role in that? I kind of hope so. That'd be really nice to have this entire universal dilemma. A big threat.
And the Generalissimo rolls in his cash all the way.
Hey, you know, but if the stories are good, you know, people will watch it.
Hey, well, I do want to add this on here. Since y'all haven't seen the whole thing, I'm not going to obviously spoil it, but I will say one thing I really enjoyed was the fight scenes.
They are pretty good.
Yes.
They were spot on through the whole thing. I'm like, wow, I wonder how much of this Charlie Cox actually did versus just a stunt guy, because there's a lot of flipping around.
Well, being the fact that his face is half covered, I don't think it's very hard to get a stunt double.
Probably not, but I'm just curious. There's a few times he's running. There's a rooftop scene, and he's running. I'm like, and he was not in his mask. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. He was not in his mask. He's running on rooftops, and I'm like, where's the stunt guy? It looks like him running. So I don't know how they did it, but
the choreography among all that is just outstanding. It's very believable.
Yeah. The episode we saw last night, the last one, it really kind of, there's a little humor even in the fight scene. So just wait till you get to it.
Yeah.
just a little bit of humor. You don't want to make it too light.
Yeah.
So, I will say this throughout the whole thing, that was very satisfying, and it ended. I mean, it was good from one end to the other. Cool. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
We're going to keep watching.
And I have to say, it left me wanting another 13 episodes after.
Well, see, that's your fault for watching it so fast. That's why we're
really taking it slowly, so we can savor the experience.
Well, that's what I was trying to explain to y'all earlier, is I had binge immersion where, you know, I'm walking around after I watched 13 episodes crammed in my head. I'm walking around going, so what is Wilson Fisk up to now? You know,
I can just see Craig, you know, he's out in his front lawn, man, I need my Defenders, man.
He's probably sitting there in front of the video player with his remote wearing his adult undergarment going, I'm good.
refresh.
Yeah.
The episode's dropped yet.
We have one more thing to stick into your MP3 library.
Oh, there's a sound I don't miss.
This is someone hacked a printer to play Eye of the Tiger.
This is from our listener, Alan Ralph, right?
I love it.
We've done floppy drive music in the past.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure I'd play this very long because it does start to grate on the eardrums.
But I would say this. It's in the right key.
It is. And the whole way through, they even get like chords in this thing. I can't figure out how they do this.
There. Yeah, pretty good.
How do you make pins?
It sounds like
on
you're listening to it on a. It sounds like you're listening to it on a bad speaker.
At McDonald's.
Yeah.
Would you like fries with that?
Are you on hold music?
Oh, this would be great on hold music.
Yeah, I like it.
Oh, that would be punishing.
We need to put this on our K7.
A tech firm elevator music.
I'm going to bring this to the gym on Monday and see if they'll play it while we work out.
The hell is this, Chuck?
Just listen.
It's MIDI disaster. And then we'll have to bring them some of those floppy drive songs, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we won't play the whole thing, but you can visualize this as well, as Craig said. Hey, on the... yeah.
You should take this and the Ghostbusters on floppy. And what was the other one we heard? Doctor Who, maybe? Something like that.
Yeah, or James Bond, something like that. I can't remember. I think it was Doctor Who.
Yeah, I can see Chuck going.
I got a playlist on my iPhone.
Just use my iPhone. Here you go.
Oh, you have to throw in some 8-bit music to that too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
that'd be fun. All right, we'll fade that out. It does go very well. Kudos to whoever spent the time to do that. Another person who's got way too much time on their hands. And
resume fodder.
Maybe. Yeah. That's about the only value.
I could hack a dot matrix printer.
Our question.
Yeah, oh, wow.
What value is that? Our question this move. I can't read and talk at the same time anymore. Our question this week is, name your least favorite superhero movie.
Favorite. Wow.
Yeah, we talked about Daredevil, which is a very popular one. But what superhero movie did you just go, oh, boy.
Actually, I already know.
You already know? Okay.
I already know.
Well, since you won't be here for our 10th anniversary show in 2 weeks, and we're off next week because Craig and I will be away on business.
We'll be in the Bahamas.
Oh, gee, that's terrible.
Whatever. Okay.
Do you have one in mind now, Ben?
Yes, I do.
It's least favorite superhero movie.
X-Men Last Stand.
You didn't care for that one.
I hated every bit of it. That was one of the worst movies I've ever seen. It completely went so far away and was utterly unfaithful to the entire X-Men franchise. The idea, I mean, okay, yes, I admit Rogue is a bit of a tortured character because she can't touch anybody, but she does eventually learn how to live with the powers that she's got, and instead they turn into a sniveling, whining character so that she couldn't wait to have the antidote administered to her so that she would lose her power. The fact that they killed, or at least tricked us into thinking that they had completely killed Xavier, as well as Cyclops, was very offensive. And the whole concept behind how Dark Phoenix came into being was also highly annoying and rather unfaithful.
You did see the after credits scene, right?
No. I waited for it, and there wasn't one when I saw it. There was no after credits scene. I keep hearing about it. But
I saw it online just the other day.
I saw it in the theater, they didn't have it.
Keith, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I do know.
No.
Okay. He's ambivalent now.
I'm just kind of...
Well, maybe the Chris Columbus Batman movies, they were pretty horrible.
Yeah.
Which makes me a heretic.
I watch anything.
Which ones?
Christopher Nolan.
Oh,
Batman films, blech.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like the early days ones.
Oh, Tim Burton?
The 80s
Those are fun.
Well, Tim Burton, we just saw the Tim Burton one the other night. That's not bad. It's okay.
It's not bad.
I'm going to reserve my judgment until we get back for the 10th anniversary show. I'll tell you guys when we're offline what my least favorite is.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear.
I think you'll agree to some degree.
It better not be The Incredibles.
Now, as I mentioned, we have no show.
That was the best one ever.
That's you got me. No show next week because Craig and I will be away on business. And in 2 weeks, unfortunately, these guys won't be here. We'll be recording April 26th is our 10th anniversary. We've been doing Technorama. Not many podcasts can say that, and we're rather proud of that.
Sunday we'll be...
Oh, be quiet.
We'll be at Castaway Key. We might be able to Skype in.
Not likely.
Skype in from Castaway Key.
We'll also be a few time zones ahead, so you'll be done at Castaway Key at this time of day.
No.
Yeah. Well, you won't be on the little island.
We'll be headed back to...
Yeah.
So, just send us your itinerary. We'll keep you.
Thank you for joining us. We want to hear from you. Send us a voicemail, 206-222-2428. Do you have any memorable moments from the last 10 years? Do you have any memories from the last 10 years?
when we started.
Or just say congratulations and hi and give us a shout out or give you a shout out. Be a little ambitious about that. Or send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. There's Twitter. There's all this other stuff that you can let us know. We would love to hear from you. Because we love you, and if you weren't around for the last 10 years, we wouldn't be here either. There's really no point. Like Craig says, without an audience, not much of a podcast. So, until then, we'll talk to you soon. Craig, Would you give us a binary high five?
101, everybody.
Yay, thank you.
Hey, that doesn't suck.